This is WPR. And among so many other reasons people trust WPR for entertainment and edification, this is Spectrum West. We're engaged in the fall membership drive, and we're not going to burden you with long messages about why we need your support. You're perceptive enough to realize that, but I love the fact that we call it a membership drive because we're all members of a very cool club, an alliance in which we both talk and both listen. If you've been donating before, please renew that support. If you haven't, welcome to the club. Join online at WPR.org or by phone at 888-202-2552. Thank you in advance. Now here's where today's road will take us. Michael Johnson is so much more than just hits like Bluer Than Blue, That's That, and Give Me Wings. He can play the guitar and has a whole bunch of CDs to his credit. He's coming to our neighborhood this weekend. We'll spend some phone time with him. There's a close relationship between art and science. We'll make that case with guests Dr. Paul Thomas and Dr. Jennifer Chapman from UW-Eau Claire. We'll show you the roads to a couple art tours going on around here this weekend, and Jim Oliver's back in the house. Yes, with Jack Mitchell, former WPR director and author of a book about our history. Did I mention art tours? Well, one is considered the granddad, the 18th Fresh Art Tour. We turn to Gene Akola, proprietor of the Akola Gallery in Durand, for those details.
I'm pretty sure we were the first ones in western Wisconsin to do it, although there's another one farther south down in Spring Green that we call the mother of all art tours.
Ah, you're the firstborn.
In this area.
Yeah. And it coincides with peak leaf color. You always have it, what, the first weekend?
We have it the first three-day weekend. So that's why this year it's actually as late as it can be in October. And I always figure October 10th is usually the peak around here, at least for the maples. And so we should be hitting some pretty good color this weekend.
You know, it's impressive to say you have 16 artist sites, studios, and galleries. But if you count the number of people involved, artisans, it's 36. That gets even more impressive.
Right. Well, yeah, it gives folks a nice variety to choose from. And you know, some art tours focus just on pottery or just on painting, but we have really a nice variety of textile arts to jewelry to wood, photography, painting. Yeah. And then even within painting, there's watercolorists, oil painters, pastel artists, acrylic.
Has it grown a lot within the span of those 18 years? I know you try to keep it fresh every year.
Yeah, we like to have some new artists every year, but then even the artists who've done it in the past always have new work, so that we do try to keep it very fresh. You know, I think we maybe started with about, well, I think the very first year was only about three or four of us, but then it soon blossomed to about seven, eight. I don't think we've ever gone over about 17. We like to keep it somewhat manageable, and even at 17, it's difficult for someone to go to all the sites and do them all justice.
You do have a downloadable map, and I'm sure there are brochures that people can pick up at various locations.
A lot of the businesses all over western Wisconsin. We actually have 20,000 brochures, so a lot of people will already have them.
Yeah, and if during our chat here people wanted to imagine what the map looked like, it's kind of Ernie Durand to the east, Bay City to the west, the Plum City area to the north, and Pepin to the south.
Exactly.
The thing that people like about these art tours, some have more amenities than others, but you guys in your 18th year have sort of mastered that, places where people are going to be able to refresh themselves and get some sustenance. You also have demonstrations. I'm sure you were one of the first to get involved in that, even some cases where the public can try their hand at stuff.
Right. Anyone who wants to learn how to throw a pot, as we say it, to turn some clay on a potter's wheel can get the opportunity at most of the potter's sites. Linda Day has a thing where you can paint your own tiles, and then I think she mails them to you. I think there's another site, the Black Cat Farmstead, where you can try your hand at spinning wool, get out there and maybe even hang out a little bit with the sheep, that sort of thing. So, yeah, there's a couple of sites, including mine and the Annex at Cultural Cloth in Maiden Rock, that have brought in artisanal work from, you know, global sources. Like mine comes from Kenya and theirs comes from quite a few different countries. So there'll be, instead of demonstrations, like a slideshow or something that shows the process and a little bit more about the folks that make the work.
Let's summarize. It is Friday through Sunday, and are they all in Pepin and Pierce counties, or is that kind of a general thing?
I think Ernie is actually in Buffalo County, right on the edge, very close to Pepin County. But it's predominantly Pepin County with a few in Pierce County.
16 artists, sites, studios, galleries open to the public, 36 different individuals involved. Gene, I'll let you give us the website because I have a feeling that's going to be a popular place.
Yes, easy to remember, freshart.org.
Gene, thanks.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Spectrum West on Wisconsin Public Radio. It's an exciting day in downtown Eau Claire, 5:30 p.m. If you're listening on Thursday, ground will be broken to initiate construction of the Confluence Performing Arts Center at the corner of Graham Avenue and Gibson Street. There'll even be some music to fill the air. Going to be there? I think I will. Michael Johnson sings and talks about his career, the love affair between science and art, and more on Spectrum West. But what's this? Jim Oliver is back. We're more than happy to have him back, and what a great time to dive back in the pool. It's Chippewa Valley Book Festival time. It begins Monday, and 10 days later, it concludes, but not before authors appear at venues all over the valley, morning, noon, and night. To christen his return, Jim welcomes one such author.
Jack Mitchell led Wisconsin Public Radio from 1976 until 1997, initiating the transition from educational radio to WPR. He was the first employee of National Public Radio, where he was instrumental in developing the news magazine All Things Considered. Jack Mitchell joined the faculty of the UW-Madison School of Journalism and Mass Communications in 1998. His latest book, Wisconsin on the Air, 100 Years of Public Broadcasting in the State That Invented It, was published in July. Jack Mitchell will be one of the presenters during the 2016 Chippewa Valley Book Festival. He will talk about his book over lunch at noon on Wednesday, October 19th, in the community room of the Chippewa Valley Museum. Jack Mitchell joins us. Welcome to Spectrum West.
Good to be here.
How did this all begin, Wisconsin Public Radio?
Well, it began as a laboratory experiment in the physics department. Radio was a new thing in the early 1900s. If you were a professor in physics or engineering and you were a student in those fields, you want to play around with it. And they did. And from a period around 1910 until 1917, when they finally got this thing to work, broadcasting voice and music. Prior to that, it had been all Morse code. How many people can listen to that and understand it? Mm-hmm. So the big deal was to be able to get voice and music out there, which involved making tubes, vacuum tubes, in order to make that happen. And a man named Professor Earl Terry, who was in the physics department, and his students made that happen in the winter of 1917. I don't know the exact date, probably January, February. That was the piece of equipment to make it work. And the big point of this is that the folks at Wisconsin decided to use it for public service. Innovation, the idea that we can use this instrument to spread the values of the university, the approaches of the university, the research of the university to the entire state, which was, of course, part of the Wisconsin idea. The boundaries of the university are the boundaries of the state.
I got the sense from the book that it all started out dedicated towards rural listeners. Is that an oversimplification?
No, it's pretty accurate. Most of the state was rural. Most of the population lived on small family farms. They were quite isolated, and the radio brought the whole world to them for the first time. And so, yes, the first audience was definitely seen as rural. The programming was quite practical for the homemaker, programming for the farmer. And it was all quite down to earth. It was nothing highfalutin about it. Those other aspects of the Wisconsin idea came in a little later.
Now, there was quite a competition in those early days between public and commercial broadcasters.
Yes, it actually continues today to some extent, but then they were fighting over survival. There were only a limited number of frequencies that you could use on the radio dial because the equipment was so primitive. If you had a one transmitter in a region, you probably couldn't have any others that would be able to be heard. They all interfered with one another. This was AM radio, of course. So we had a major fight in order to get the state stations, as they were called, that was WHA and WLBL up in central Wisconsin, to have their permanent places on the dial. And several commercial operations went after us. They wanted those frequencies, and they wanted to expand their own. And then Wisconsin Public Broadcasting, the old state stations, tried to get a frequency out of Chicago. Chicago has five big clear channel stations, and Wisconsin didn't have any. And everybody in this state said, well, wait a minute, one of those Chicago stations ought to be here. And so both commercial stations and the state stations tried to steal one of those frequencies away from Chicago. It didn't work, but it was a good idea.
There's always some discussion of which was the very first radio station in the United States. I spent part of my life in western Pennsylvania, and I know that KDKA in Pittsburgh claims to be the first in the country. How does that jive
with
that?
That's ridiculous. Ridiculous. I grew up in Detroit, and WWJ in Detroit claimed to be the world's first radio station.
Oh.
I would say this. It's not clear when anybody really started, because as in Wisconsin, you started off sending Morse code. Okay, is that a broadcast station? Well, not really. Mm-hmm. If you add voice and music, well, then you're getting there. But even then, you're not really a radio station unless you're on pretty much every day with a schedule that people can rely on. We went through that here. All these stations went through that. So the argument about who was first or who's the oldest is in a way a little bit silly, and anybody can make the claim depending on how you want to define when you began.
Uh-huh.
I don't think it's fair to say that we were the first broadcast station. There were other people doing voice and music. But we were the first to see public service as the reason for broadcasting. Everybody else was in it to make money. Public broadcasting in Wisconsin said, look, there's something other than making money. We ought to get information out there that people can use, they really need. We should use it to educate people. We should use it for our public affairs so we can discuss issues that matter politically. So the vision was, I think, the key thing for Wisconsin. That's why I put the subtitle, in the state that invented it. We invented the concept of public service broadcasting in the United States, not necessarily broadcasting.
Back in the day, it was called educational radio and later on educational television. When did that transition go from educational radio TV to public radio, public television?
There's a specific date. That was 1967, mm-hmm. when Congress passed the Public Broadcasting Act. You notice that was exactly 50 years after the beginning of WHA. So the first 50 years, WHA was called Educational Broadcasting. And then in 67, the nation decided that they needed something like this as a national system. And we had the creation of National Public Radio and PBS to create nationally the kind of things that had been going on in Wisconsin for 50 years. And so public broadcasting as a name came in at that point. I would say the concept of public broadcasting for public service purposes, that went back right from the beginning. That really did start here. The educational material, school programming, and that kind of thing really wasn't part of the original Wisconsin idea, but that was eliminated by the Public Broadcasting Act. We did not exist for schools' children. We existed for the general public. And that, in 1967, became the national system for public broadcasting, and we pretty much adopted it here, too.
He is Jack Mitchell, the author of Wisconsin on the Air, 100 Years of Public Broadcasting and the State That Invented It. One of the amusing parts of the book that brought back unpleasant memories of the news business, mostly in those days, television. You got into some grief with the newspaper in Madison over the development of the Ideas Network. I just found it amusing in your description. Those were the days, I believe, when 60 Minutes was taking their cameras and barging into somebody's office and throwing questions at them, and the Capital Times reporter did the same thing to you. They came barging into your office.
Right, totally unannounced.
Yeah.
I was sitting there. Suddenly somebody out in the hall was calling my name. they didn't make an appointment or anything. I'd been happy to talk to them, but they just came in, the photographer and the reporter, shooting questions at me. And basically it was kind of, have you stopped beating your wife kind of questions. They had made up their mind. You know, sure. We were destroying a great tradition. Mm-hmm. I don't think we were, but we were changing things. Mm-hmm. But I saw it as trying to modernize what had been a 50-year or 60-year tradition of instructional or educational material, but put it into the modern formats of radio, because radio had changed, you know, rather dramatically when television came in, mm-hmm. and they were no longer doing 15-minute and half-hour programs we grew up with, but they were going into longer formats and designed for people to tune in and tune out of as they went through their day, because radio had become an accompaniment to other activities. And we didn't plan our life around the radio schedule. We planned our lives about other things, and then we took radio along with us. Mm-hmm. And radio has to be seen differently when you do it that way.
Mm-hmm. The whole kerfuffle was over the development of the Ideas Network. You know, talk a little bit about how that came about. We are right now talking on the Ideas Network.
We had started off, when I arrived, there was one statewide network, owned primarily by the Educational Communications Board. In addition, there were a lot of university stations run by the various campuses. And myself and the head of the Educational Communications Board envisioned two statewide networks. And at the time, we thought one would be mostly classical music and the other would be mostly information and talk. But when we accumulated this group of stations, we then had to decide what to put on them. And by that time, it seemed that classical music wasn't sufficient enough to justify a full-time station. And so we also felt, I felt, that we had this great tradition of Wisconsin programming in the state, that we had this statewide network that everyone could hear, where we could talk, we could exchange ideas, and so that we would have two networks, one that was classical music and the NPR news magazines brought in primarily from, you know, other parts of the country. They're not Wisconsin per se. And then we would have another network that would be really much more Wisconsin-centered, as we had been back in 1917 when it all began. I saw the possibility that we could become almost totally just a relay station for NPR programming or other national programming, which is very good and it ought to be available in Wisconsin. But we had a lot to do here in Wisconsin and a lot to say and a lot that we should be offering. So we broke ground, new ground really, by creating a network that is primarily state-focused and does not rely on NPR for its news magazines or classical music. Those are the two mainstays of most public radio stations, NPR News, classical music. Well, we have a station like that, but then we have the Ideas Network, which is quite different.
The book is Wisconsin on the Air, 100 Years of Public Broadcasting in the State That Invented It. And we've been talking with the author, Jack Mitchell. He will be among the presenters at the Chippewa Valley Book Festival, which begins Monday, October 10th and runs through October the 20th. Professor Mitchell will discuss his book over lunch at noon on Wednesday, October 19th in the community room in the Chippewa Valley Museum. Reservations for the lunch must be made by October 10th. Here's fair warning, attendance is limited. Jack Mitchell, thanks so much for talking to us.
Thanks for asking me.
And thank you, Mr. Oliver. This is Spectrum West. Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from Mayo Clinic Health System, encouraging families and friends to talk about advanced care planning this holiday season. More information is at mayoclinichealthsystem.org. Support also comes from Simply Done in Downsville, a place for gifts, ideas, and space for events. Home of Dunn County Pottery, featuring wood-fired pottery and fair trade gifts. More at simply-dunn.com.
Hi, this is Michael Johnson, and I'm looking forward to chatting with you later on Spectrum West.
You know, this week is sprinkled with news about our fall membership drive. It's my pleasure, along with Jim Oliver and volunteers, to bring you Spectrum West each week, but it's a fact of life this wouldn't be around without your encouragement. Support in the form of dollars and cents. We'd like to help you stay connected with Wisconsin, America, and the world, and ask that you make a contribution now online at WPR.org or by phone at 888-202-2552. please, and thanks. Well, you know, the other gallery tour opportunity this weekend is in its seventh year, and the name suggests the pace with which you might engage. Meandering. Isa Everode runs the Purple Pelican in Spooner. One of the luxuries of having the intestinal fortitude to be on the radio is that you get to tout your place. Tell people about the Purple Pelican.
Awesome. Okay. I'd love to. It's a small artist-owned gallery. I'm the artist painter, actually.
Okay.
And I'm not a consignment gallery, so I go to the American Craft Retail Expo in Philadelphia. Sometimes I go to Toronto to a by-hand art show, and I buy my art all handmade from the U.S. and or Canada in some instances. And then I'm the painter, so most of my wall art will be my own work. And so that's nice. I've been able to spend some extra time getting that done. I bought this old building 12 years ago and totally renovated it, so I live in an artist's loft above the gallery with
wow.
my husband.
Cool.
And he also helps me in the business. I also do custom framing, and I'm an art restorer. Almost anything, really. Paintings, drawings, documents, that sort of thing.
The restoration includes photo restoration.
It does. People... And I almost forgot to stick that in there.
Yeah,
photo restoration.
A lot of people have a lot of old photos. People can come to art classes as well.
That's right. I do one-on-one classes. I don't have a big space, and I like to do personal, private lessons. Each student gets 5 weeks, and then after that, we can renew their time. And the nice thing about one-on-one classes, if you miss the class, if something happens and you have to reschedule, you don't lose the class. We can just reschedule it for another time.
It's time for the seventh Art Meander. It includes 16 galleries and studios in northwestern Wisconsin. We don't have time to list all 16, but tell us the towns in which people will go on their self-guided tours.
Yep, it starts on the north end here in Spooner, goes Spooner, Shell Lake, Baronet, Cumberland, Cameron and Chautauqua, or you can start on the south end at Chautauqua and go Chautauqua, Cameron, Cumberland, Shell Lake, Baronet, and Spooner. So we have galleries in every one of those towns. There's addresses, of course, and maps on all of the brochures, and there's a website, art-meander.com, where you can go and see all the businesses and galleries involved, as well as a map.
Well, in this day and age, I don't think we meander enough.
No, that's true. You know? And you know what? This is really cool this year. We got involved. We're in the American Craft Week, and we get some national exposure as well. Somehow, I don't know if I'm getting it wrong, my memory's wrong, but it seems that the color change is never before about the first or second week of October. This year, it really peaks, according to all the maps, in this first week, right whenever our meander's happening on Friday and Saturday. So
yeah.
If people want to get out and see the color change, we're excited that it's happening right when we expected that it would this year. We got it right.
It's Friday and Saturday. Give us the hours on those days, would you please?
Yep, it's Friday and Saturday. Friday is from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., so everybody will be open during that time. Saturday, the 8th, it's 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Even our sponsors are going to be hosting artists, quite a few of them, and doing events, music, poetry, painters, potters, crafters of every ilk. And Spooner has really got a lot going on here. Seven of our sponsors are from Spooner, and five of our galleries are here. Then on the south end, there's lots of stuff going on down there as well. So you couldn't miss it. Whichever end you start on, you're going to do great. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, these are important opportunities for people to get to know the other people who make the stuff that they like.
And there are no snobs here. You're going to see everything from modern to traditional art, wearable art, body art. We have a tattoo artist that's going to be showing some of her work.
You ought to produce a t-shirt that says no snobs allowed.
There you go.
What do you
think?
That's
a good idea. We even have salvage art.
Oh, cool.
It's just going to be a blast.
Total of 16 galleries and studios in northwest Wisconsin. It is the 7th Art Meander, Friday and Saturday. Isa, thanks for being with us.
Thanks so much.
Fun weekend. Wow. Coming up on Spectrum West, art and science go very well together. And Michael Johnson visits Wisconsin. This is a brief reminder about our fall membership drive. If you enjoy WPR, remember it's here because you and people all over Wisconsin show support with contributions. Listener support is the largest and proudest ingredient in the WPR budget. It's what literally keeps us working for you. We're hoping you'll continue this nearly 100-year tradition with a comfortable contribution either online at WPR.org or on the phone at 888 202-2552. Nice to sit back and listen to a little Butch Thompson. What do you think? Peanut butter and jelly, rest and relaxation, macaroni and cheese, white wine and fish, science and art. Yes, famously, science and art do go very well together. If you're skeptical, listen to Dr. Paul Thomas, Professor of Physics and Astronomy, and Dr. Jennifer Chapman, Associate Professor of Theater Arts, both UW-Eau Claire faculty. They're big believers in the concept, the union, so much so they're putting on an evening to express it. It's called Dedicated and Unmatched Reason. Theater students will read from plays examining or frolicking within the idea that science and art are compatible and concentric. Art and science, science and art. You know, if one were to say, well, where do they interact? One body in which they interacted a lot was a guy like Da Vinci. He was both a scientist and an artist. It is said that his artistic works, and I'm reading here, were informed by scientific investigation. Science and art were different paths leading to the same destination, a higher spiritual truth. Okay, so tell me how out of the loop I am with this stuff.
That's absolutely wonderful, Alan. I think everyone that I've ever known in my life who I respect would say that they're following in a very modest way in the steps of Leonardo da Vinci. I think the American heritage of liberal arts education is devoted to this idea of convergence between art and science. You know, we require our art students to do science courses. We require our science students to do art courses. Mm-hmm. We think about it as one common body of knowledge, the greatest thing the human race has ever produced, I believe. So it was sort of a no-brainer, you know, for Matt Jewell and I. A couple of years ago, it was very embryonic initially, but to start an annual set of programs that would really try to capture this intersection. And so we did it to begin with in 2014 with the showing of a movie called Particle Fever about the discovery of the Higgs boson at the Large Hadron Collider in Europe, mm-hmm. followed by a discussion. About 130 people showed up for that event. We did it a year ago in November 2015 with myself, my wife, Julie Mikowski, Thomas Teat Raid, George Uphall, in a musical astronomical event called Waves,
yes.
Celebration of the exploration of the solar system with music wound into it, which gathered an audience of almost 500 people in the Ojibwa Ballroom. The success of those two events really gave us the idea that we had found a niche that we could continue. And so we were interested in what the next project would be. And one of the great things that happened here, thanks to Kim Way and the folk at the UWC Foundation, is that for the first time we got financial support for this project to the tune of $3,000 a year for the next 3 years, which we intend to use both to support future programs and also to serve as matching money for grants that we'll write to make these programs more sustainable and to expand them out into the local community a bit more. Mm-hmm. And we couldn't have been happier this year to have our colleagues from Music and Theater Arts, Arthur Grody and Jennifer Chapman, to work with us on a theater science fusion event, which is why we're here today to talk about that.
And Jennifer is here. Was this always on your radar as well? I mean, artists study science and the opposite. Was this just a natural? Did this make sense to you?
Yeah, there are quite a few plays that examine the intersections between creative pursuits and scientific inquiry. I think that they are a natural pairing, and theater is such a wonderful medium for also looking at history as well, understanding the nuanced moments in significant historical discovery. And so mm-hmm. We chose only four plays for the event that we are reading from, mm-hmm. but there are other plays we could have chosen. We were just trying to keep our focus narrow in the topic.
Okay, the event we're talking about is coming up on December 1st. It's at Schofield Auditorium, 7:30 p.m. So what are the plays?
Copenhagen, Marjorie Prime, Silent Sky, and Picasso at the La Pinaille. Copenhagen is a story set in 1941, an imagined meeting between Werner Heisenberg and Niels Bohr, where they debate the existence of the atomic bomb and whether or not it was worth it. And our second play, Marjorie Prime, is a futuristic story. It's set in the mid-21st century. Robots, artificial intelligence, have been created to be like human beings, to serve elderly people whose memories are faltering. Hmm. And these artificial intelligent robots are created to be like somebody from their past as a comfort. And the play examines our relationship to technology and our relationships to one another.
Just that story, to interject,
yeah.
I wonder how often art has inspired science. Jules Verne, you know, had wild ideas, but then scientists say, well, it's pretty feasible.
Yes. Yeah. I think it happens again and again. I think there's endless examples of it. You know, one of my favorite movies that I saw as a child, 2001, A Space Odyssey.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There are endless examples in that one movie, but one of my favorite ones, there's just a tiny scene where a person flaps down a flat computer on a table, an iPad.
Mm-hmm.
and many of the people that have worked at Apple said they were inspired to design the iPad that way because they'd seen it.
Yeah, it's kind of a why not thing. I'm sorry I interrupted.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So our other two plays are Silent Sky, an historical play. It's about a true story about a woman named Henrietta Leavitt, who was an astronomer at the Harvard Observatory around the year 1900. She died quite young, but she discovered some really important stuff when she was counting stars that her male colleagues ended up taking credit for.
Mm.
It's a play about interpersonal relationships and their role in scientific inquiry.
Wow.
And then finally, our last play, which is a really funny play, called Picasso at the Lapina Gille. It's by Steve Martin.
The
Steve Martin, yeah.
Okay.
And it really feels like a Steve Martin movie when you watch it, sort of juvenile humor throughout. I imagine he began this play thinking to himself, well, Picasso and Einstein walked into a bar. I wonder how that joke would end. It is an imagined meeting between Picasso and Einstein just before Einstein is about to publish his theory of relativity. And the play is a really humorous kind of meditation on the way in which creative pursuits are very similar to scientific pursuits. These will be staged readings, which means they won't be memorized,
but
they will be well rehearsed. Mm-hmm. Because they're just selections, there will also be an introduction, a description of the play, and also a description of the scientific concepts within the play.
Dr. Jennifer Chapman. She's professor of theater arts, theater program coordinator, and Dr. Paul Thomas, professor of physics and astronomy, both from UW-Eau Claire. I read an article, this is how far I went into this stuff, in Scientific American, believe it or not, that had a headline that said, "Scientists and artists, more alike than different. Art and science, to those who practice neither, they seem like polar opposites, one data-driven, one emotion-driven, yet both are dedicated to asking big questions."
I think that's absolutely
definitely,
right. The tools definitely may differ, but the big goals are the same.
Mm-hmm.
So the plays and the reading is December 1st, Schofield Hall, 7:30 p.m. Paul, we have to let you get in promotion for the Ask a Scientist series. Growing more popular with each season, it's about to start.
You know, I couldn't have been happier with the success of Ask a Scientist, Al. You know, we're in our ninth year now. These events, they're free of charge, open to everyone. We get people from the university or from the community, from the medical centers, all sorts of people, sometimes visitors to the campus from other countries. Talk about a wide range of science events. And actually, the first couple of them this fall are fused in with the art and science event that we just talked about. The first event is October 19th at 7 p.m. at Acoustic Cafe in downtown Eau Claire, a repeat of the Waves performance. It's this presentation of the exploration of the solar system wound into flute and percussion and keyboard music in really a one-of-a-kind presentation. The Ask a Scientist events in general are the third Wednesdays of a month. Sometimes we do schedule them out of sequence if something comes up, and we do have one of those events, the next one, which will be on November the 2nd, Wednesday again. But this event on the 2nd will be Matt Jewell and Jim Rubicki, who are colleagues of ours in this art and science project. Matt is a professor in the Materials Science and Engineering Center, and Jim is a professor of physics. And they'll be saying more about this art and science event that we have scheduled for December, more about the plays involved, more about the reasons that we chose what we chose, and more about the concepts behind these plays and why we think that they were good choices for this art and science event.
I have a feeling I could talk all day about this. By the way, thanks for the planet walk. I think that's pretty cool. I understand that you have you're being thanked for that. I did see one, I think. I should take the whole walk one of these
days. It's a beautiful walk in a beautiful city. Only good things have happened downtown. This is the scale model of the solar system, a little over a mile in length, the farmer's market all the way to the university.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks to you guys, I'm going to appreciate the relationship between science and art a lot more going forward. And this was kind of a mini collaboration of art and science here on Spectrum.
Absolutely.
West.
Yeah,
thank you.
Dr. Paul Thomas, Dr. Jennifer Chapman, thank you.
Thanks so much.
Thanks so much, Alan.
Time constraints sometimes trap us to mainly details, and when it comes to fascinating topics and guests, that can be frustrating if you're curious like me. But that's all the more reason for you guys to take in these events, the Ask a Scientist series and the December 1st evening in Schofield Hall. Details for all of it can be found at the uwec.edu website. Spectrum West on Wisconsin Public Radio. You know, I get calls and emails expressing thanks for featuring the people and places who supply the arts and culture of West Wisconsin. They tell me our support is important to their success. Well, we also have thanks to deliver for your support during this fall membership drive. Donating to the future of Wisconsin Public Radio is another thing you're good at, and we appreciate it more than you know. Donate today online at WPR.org or via telephone at 888-202-2552. Please and thank you. Support for entertainment and information on WPR comes from Marquardt Toyota, offering the all-wheel drive RAV4, a crossover committed to reliability. Marquardt Toyota, located off Highway 53 between Eau Claire and Chippewa Falls, or at MarquardtToyota.com. Support also comes from GreenRoutes.org in collaboration with Explore Minnesota, an online directory to on-farm dining events and sustainable businesses from local vineyards to pizza farms. Green Routes, that's RoutesOrg. Gee, I wonder what's on stage in Western Wisconsin. No need to wonder anymore. Here's Jim Oliver.
Thanks, Al. Oklahoma will be presented by the Chippewa Valley Theater Guild through Sunday at the State Theater in Eau Claire. The Eau Claire Children's Theater will present Into the Woods October 13th through the 16th in the Oxford Theater. Beauty and the Beast, a joint production of the Falls Players of Black River Falls and the Neillsville Area Players, will be staged Friday, Saturday, and Sunday in the Lunda Theater in Black River Falls. The Phipps Children's Theater will perform Mother Goose October 7th through the 16th at the Phipps Center for the Arts in Hudson. On Golden Pond will be staged Saturday and Sunday, and next Thursday by the Festival Theater, Franklin Square Black Box Theater in St. Croix Falls. The show will continue weekends through October 23rd. Till All Need for Witnesses Cease will be staged by Theater in the Woods Friday through Sunday in the Erica Quam Theater in Shell Lake. The Old Gem Theater of New Richmond will present Johnny Appleseed for school groups through October 21st. And the St. Croix Off-Broadway Dinner Theater in Hudson will stage That Love and Feeling, Story of the Righteous Brothers, weekends through October 28th.
There he is, Jim Oliver, back. How nice. Well, you know, it's time to catch up with Michael Johnson. Not a household name until you hear some of the songs he's famous for. Let's listen to something off his latest CD, Moonlit Deja Vu. This is April Fool.
I'm just a fool for April. There's nothing more to say. Long as I can remember, she's led my heart astray. When I was green as willow, she had me ditching school. And even then she tricked me. I'm just an April fool.
April Fool,
written by Hugh Prestwood. We'll talk about him, too, among lots of updating since our last conversation about 5 years ago with Michael Johnson, coming this weekend to Western Wisconsin. Looking forward to this conversation, I did a lot more reading about you, but among all the reading and listening that I did, I found a favorite quote of yours, and it is this: cars drive better when you name them.
Oh, they do. Yes, indeed.
So I'm in the process of naming mine.
I've named every single one of my vehicles. One was a van named Van Gogh.
Oh, sure.
And then, of course, Van Johnson.
Uh-huh.
Then, of course, Van Camp. Right now, my little Mazda is named Otto.
There you are.
Yeah. But I have a friend who named her car Uriah Heep, which I thought was a great name for a vehicle.
I have a Uriah Heep album somewhere at home.
Yeah, I probably do, too, somewhere around here.
I also read your monologue from 2009 after you became a grandpa for the first time.
Oh, wow, yeah.
That was pretty cool. It appeared as if you were in a very good place at that time. Is that the story of the older Michael Johnson, Good Place?
Oh, sure. Yeah, that was wonderful. In fact, I played a show in Madisonville, Kentucky last week.
Mm-hmm.
While down there, visited my grandsons and my granddaughter.
So how many do you have now?
Well, I've got four.
Well, there you go. Your past, as I, you know, the more I read and the more I listened to and the more YouTube videos I watched, it's kind of like an onion. I mean, you peel away one good layer and there's another good layer. And I wanted to say, what a convoluted life you've had. But then I went to the definition of convoluted. You know, it means busy and full, but it also has a connotation that is difficult and drawn out. So I coined a new word. What a provoluted life you've had.
Oh, why, thank you.
Yeah. Were you a guitar player first and then a singer-songwriter?
Well, the songwriter part, I'm still questioning. But I just wanted to play guitar. I started playing when I was 13 and didn't know how to quit.
Yeah, and I saw a video of you playing with Leo Kottke, and in passing to the interviewer, he said that you had studied in Spain.
I did. Yes, huh? I did. Studied in Barcelona the better part of a year. I learned a lot. I really did. I had to do my homework because some of these kids, they were light years ahead of me. I had a lot to learn.
This whole Mitchell Trio thing kind of blew me away. I was a very young fan of the Chad Mitchell Trio, but this was you and David Boyce and John Denver, and the group just kept the name, huh?
We did. Chad loaned us his name. We leased it, I guess you'd say. We were the Mitchell Trio for a while. Then we became Denver, Boyce, and Johnson. Very catchy thing, and it didn't seem to last too much longer after that. We did 191 concerts in 1 year. And I'll never do that again. You know, that's about 300 days on the road altogether. And, you know, I was too old to do it then.
I saw an interview and you talked about a doctor who taught you some things about singing and said that singing comes from a different part of your brain.
Yeah.
You need to speak and sing songs like you're talking to people.
That's right. Yeah, you need to speak it first and kind of sub-vocalize it and see how you would say it, and then sing it that way. Oh, man, it really saved my bacon because I was very concerned. I couldn't sing bluer than blue, you know, because of the ooh sound. For some reason, I'd start to yodel.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, you can say it. And I said, yeah, you can say bluer than blue. You can say bluer than blue, you know, and he gave me themes and variations. And then he said, well, why can't you sing it? And I said, well, I don't know. Comes from a different part of your brain, and it's been wonderful. And not only that, it makes it more communicable because it makes it more conversational.
After you go, I can catch up on Marie. After you go, I have a lot more time for sleeping. And when you're gone, looks like things are gonna be a lot easier. Life will be a breeze, you know. I really should be glad, but I'm bluer than blue, sadder than sad. You're the only light this empty room has ever had. Life without you is gonna be bluer than.
You've
you've had so many wonderful successes and so many great songs. It would be wrong not to go backwards in your life, but let's go forward a little bit, or let's leap to the present. I visited all the good old stuff, the photo album. Now it's 2016. What are audiences in Hayward and Alma, Wisconsin, going to hear from the evolved Michael Johnson?
Evolved. That's a good word. I have no idea. You know, I'm just still singing for my supper. I play a little more guitar than some of the audience might expect, but you got to be careful when you say something like that. This world is filled with wonderful guitarists these days. I do things off of my latest CD, but I can't really say latest anymore because it's been a while. So now I say most recent CD, which is a project called Moonlit Deja Vu.
Yeah.
And I've got some, I guess I call them art songs. Really artsy, craftsy.
It's a wonderful CD. I had a lot of fun and a lot of pleasure listening to it.
Thank you.
Often getting older is going from cool and busy to more meaningful. Are you finding that?
Yes, I think so. You know, I'd much rather know what the song is about than who wrote it, who's even singing it, who's playing on it. You know, those things are very important in the beginning. But really, after you have enough birthdays, it's got to be about something.
On the phone with Michael Johnson, singer, guitarist, songwriter. The website is mjblue.com. He's playing Friday night at the Park Center in Hayward, Wisconsin, and Saturday night at the famous Big River Theater in Alma, Wisconsin. I don't usually come up with stock questions. I usually just have the conversation and see what arises. But I kind of like this question as it pertains to a guy like you. What are you better at this stage of life than ever before?
I'm better at writing things down because I haven't found the Windex in the fridge yet.
Yeah.
But my memory, it serves me, but not maybe as well as I would like.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I'm pretty good at making lists. My favorite book right now is a book called The Checklist Manifesto, and it's a marvelous book about making lists. I know how pedantic that sounds, but yeah, I'm very good at making lists and trying to stay organized, because if I don't work at it, I'm not organized at all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Tell us about your relationship with Hugh Prestwood. He's a pretty prolific songwriter and an interesting guy. I went to his website as well.
Yeah, Hugh's an amazing person. He's my favorite songwriter. I say he's my favorite living songwriter, and if he passes away before I do, he'll be my favorite dead songwriter.
Uh-huh.
Because he's just really, I mean, I consider him Robert Frost, a wonderful, wonderful writer, so insightful, prolific in a way, but he's sort of like Beethoven. He works very, very hard and very long hours on his material, and he works on them in groups of one, not exactly cranking them out, but they're always worth it. I just feel like a perennial student of his.
He thinks in a different way.
Well, actually, you know, sometimes I'll hear something and I'll say, you know, nobody could have written that. Was that in the Bible? I mean, geez, because it's just so well-crafted and so fine, and never having been said before. He's very unique that way. There aren't that many cliches.
The prolific side of him is when you go to his website and see how many songs he's written for so many different people.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Well, we're looking forward to seeing you and hearing you. Other than continuing to perform, you're going to record again?
I am. I am recording, and I'm doing it at home.
Okay.
And I started off with this lofty plan. My working title is Plus One, and that each song would be a duet featuring another player or a second singer or some such.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, gee, that's a good idea. And then I got a couple songs in, listened back to the tracks, and I'd go, you know what else I hear on this? There went that idea out the window. The whole thing is just kind of unraveled, and what I'm doing is I've realized I've got 150 songs that I want to document and archive. In the process of doing that, I'm saying, well, hell, I want to make some CDs. So that's the way I'm going about it. I'm just sort of recording what it is I feel like these days.
Huh. Yeah, I mean, a musician's and a songwriter's legacy is his music, after all.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
You should be able to put out there what you want to put out there. And I guarantee you, we all want to hear it.
Well, thank you. I'm going to give you what I got.
Michael Johnson, thanks so much for being with us on Spectrum West. I appreciate it, and all the best. Keep up the great work, and keep coming over to Wisconsin, because you're one of our favorites.
Thank you so much, Al. I appreciate the opportunity, and you guys take care.
I know a book where the hero gets skinned alive, boiled in oil. Hansel and Gretel are cooked to perfection and wrapped in foil. And I found myself in the stew. I turn red, I turn white, I turn blue. When under the covers I shuddered the whole night through. Well, gee, I'm glad I worried about that. It's bound to do me good. Just so I know when they lay me out flat. Done all the worrying I could.
You know, he does a lot of serious music on Moonlit Deja Vu, and I'm so glad he got to some sarcasm, because his humorous stuff is pretty good, too. Michael Johnson, Park Center in Hayward, 7:30 Friday, and Saturday night also at 7:30 at the legendary Big River Theater in Alma, Wisconsin. Tickets at BigRiverTheater.com. You know, things are always greener when she's doing the news releases. Thank you. Brown is the combination of all things colorful. So is our WPR version. Gracias. There, too. Spectrum Memos, Clearwater Comedy presents comedian Mary Mack Saturday night, 7 o'clock at the Plus in downtown Eau Claire, the start of an exciting and funny season of open mics and headliners. 7th Annual Eau Queer Film Festival gets underway next Tuesday at UW Eau Claire. Schedule details online at eauqueer.com. The Barron Music Club presents a lifetime of music by saxophonist Brian Kozer and vocal group Mood Swing at the Barron Area Community Center. Saturday evening at 7, proceeds go to music scholarships. Lake Wobegon Brass Band appears Sunday at the Mabel Tainter in Menominee, 4 p.m. MabelTainter.org is that website. The exhibit Metal Places, Metal People, featuring Mark Blaski sculptures and Dale Luthy photography, is up at the Janet Carson Gallery at the Eau Claire Regional Arts Center. Up through November 11th, the artist reception is tonight, if you're listening Thursday, from 6 to 8 p.m. Next week, the Chippewa Valley Jazz Orchestra backs some ladies singing the blues. A trio of angelic voices fly into western Wisconsin. A big honor for a small village. Jim Oliver chickens out with another book festival author and more. Thanks, folks, for contributing to WPR. We could not do any of this without you. I'm Al Ross. Spectrum West returns next week. See ya.